The conversation continues with James Freeman on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hello and welcome to today's show. It is Monday, the 15th of April, 2024. My name is James Freeman and this is the Freeman Report on today's News Talk, TNT. So what to make of the Iranian attack on Israel and the response from Western leaders? Well, the UK's unelected Foreign Secretary, David Cameron, posted on X saying that the UK unequivocally condemns Iran's attack against Israel and is working urgently with partners to prevent further escalation. A word that many leaders are using, escalation. US President Joe Biden said, "I condemn Iran's attacks in the strongest possible terms and reaffirm America's ironclad commitment to the security of Israel." French President Macron said, "I condemn in the strongest terms the unprecedented attack launched by Iran against Israel, which threatens to destabilize the region. France is working on de-escalation with its partners and so calls for restraint." Germany's Chancellor also condemned Iran's airstrikes on Israel in the strongest possible terms. And the G7 group of nations that includes America, UK, Germany, France, Italy, Japan and Canada put out a statement saying they condemned the attacks and that they will work to prevent an uncontrolled regional escalation. But the irony is that recent events feel actually very controlled and managed, very much like the lockstep we saw in recent years across Western governments during COVID. I haven't seen one statement from a Western leader that recognises Iran's right to defend itself after Israel bombed its consulate in Syria, killing two senior Iranian generals. And by the way, Israel's attack on the Iranian consulate took place on April the 1st, which of course is April Fool's Day. So who is the fool in all of this? Well, in the context of the lockstep reaction to Iran's retaliatory attack, I think it's we, the populations of the West, who are supposed to be the fools in this situation. Because if de-escalation was the aim of G7 leaders, as they all claim, then holding Israel account for its behaviour would be part of the dialogue. But it's not. G7 leaders keep on telling us that Israel has the right to defend itself while its bombs kill more than 30,000 civilians. It continues to starve over a million in Gaza and it bombs other countries' consulates. In the past, we would definitely have seen calls for de-escalation from concerned Western countries, including calls for Israel to show restraint. But we haven't seen any of that. So what is going on? Is this part of a wider strategic play by America that the G7 is all part of? Iran is a key arms supplier and economic partner to Russia. So is this part of a wider move by the West, led by Israel, all hidden under the blanket of the 7th of October attacks? Putin has warned the United States not to interfere in the Iran-Israel tensions and has told Biden that if America supports Israel, Russia will not sit idly by and do nothing. So if we accept that the G7 is acting in lockstep, then that indicates there is a plan that is being deployed and not the propaganda line that we're all being fed that suggests things are just escalating due to events spiraling out of control. Iran, I think, had to respond to the Israeli attack, but made clear that it would do so in a way that did not encourage escalation, and that the US has been clear that it will not involve itself in any direct attacks on Iran. There is also the fact that the US was very clear about its plan to strike Iranian targets in the Middle East back in January, but outside of Iran in retaliation for the three American soldiers that were killed by Iranian-backed forces in Jordan in January. So was this attack on the Iranian embassy part of America's retaliation carried out by Israel to make it impossible for Iran to blame America directly? I think it probably was, because it mirrors exactly what is happening in Ukraine, where Russian assets are targeted by Ukraine using UK and US military kit and support. I think what is happening now is all part of a very deliberate military strategy by the US. Senior Democratic politicians are certainly indicating this is part of an extended proxy war. Nancy Pelosi has appeared on US TV many times saying as much when she said that anyone calling for a ceasefire with Hamas is spreading Mr. Putin's message, thereby tying all of this up to America's proxy war with Russia. Do I think we're on the edge of World War III? I guess potentially, if there is a major miscalculation by one of the key players in this game of chess, Russia, Iran, Israel, and maybe even a miscalculation by America itself. Although the way that this game is being played, it seems that it is America that is trying to force an error from its adversaries. But it doesn't feel like we're on the edge of World War III, not to me anyway, because where are the genuine calls for de-escalation? There aren't any, which makes all of this feel like theatre and maybe even a huge distraction from Western plans for Gaza. Maybe this is all about those gas fields off of Gaza and that planned canal route to Europe. Maybe that is what this is all about. But what are your thoughts? Do you think we're on the edge of World War III? Do let me know in the live chat or email me at jamesfreeman@tntradio.live. My guests this hour to debate this question are British military sniper turned journalist Warren Thornton and TNT host and former Lib Dem MP Lembit Obick. And if you want to join in the conversation, head over to tntradio.live and click on the chat icon. My name is James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report for today's News Talk, TNT.
Going 360 on the headlines.
It's really well-balanced conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, over to our political editor, the fabulous Basil Valentine. Hello, Basil.
Hello, James. Great to be with you, and hello to our viewers and listeners all around the world.
Right. So, Basil, obviously, you're filling in for Gemma. I think she's feeling a little bit under the weather. I hope she recovers for tomorrow. But, Basil, what are the UK's news headlines today?
Well, David Cameron, our old Etonian foreign secretary, has finally said something approximating to sanity, echoing Joe Biden's suggestion that Benjamin Netanyahu should take the win and not retaliate against the drone attacks over the weekend, suggesting that Israel should act with head as well as heart. He said, "I think we're very anxious to avoid escalation and to say to our friends in Israel, it's time to think with head as well as heart. In many ways, this is a double defeat for Iran. Not only was their attack an almost total failure, but also the rest of the world can now see what a malign influence they are in the region and understand their true nature." I mean, I think that last comment is a real weasel words, if you ask me. He seems to be ignoring the fact that the Israelis struck first in this particular exchange, a historic exchange, the first time in the over 40 years since the Iranian Revolution that Iran has directly attacked Israel. And last week, Israel Katz, the Israeli foreign minister, said that if the Iranians did indeed launch any kind of attack from Iranian soil, that they would respond in kind. However, nobody was killed in the Iranian attack. One seven-year-old girl was injured. Are the Israelis prepared to launch World War III on the basis of the injuries to one seven-year-old girl? But 68 people were killed in the Middle East, were shot by army gunfire or by artillery shells fired from tanks, including four people today. But where were they, James?
Yeah.
They were in Gaza. Four people were killed this morning in Gaza, attempting to return to the rubble of their homes in the north from the extremely squalid conditions forced upon them by the Israelis in the south. 68 Palestinians have been killed in the last 24 hours attempting to return to their homes in the north by snipers. But where's David Cameron's condemnation of that? Indeed, where is the blanket news coverage? I mean, it was bizarre over the weekend. You had people like Yvette Cooper, the Labour spokesman, on the television saying that the RAF intercepted the Iranian air raid in order to protect civilian life on the ground. Well, why didn't she say the same thing about Gaza? You know, 15,000 children killed, not a word. It's, you know, the double standards that have been on display are absolutely off the charts with respect to this one. The Iranians were initially highly aggrieved by the fact that neither the Security Council nor any major Western leaders condemned the attack on their consulate. They were pressing last week for a UN Security Council resolution condemning the attack on their consulate, which, as you pointed out, was a very egregious breach of the Vienna Convention. No such resolution was forthcoming. Had it been, they might not have gone to military action.
Yeah, it's a curious one. To me, Basil, this feels like there is a long-standing plan in place. Everybody from the West or the G7 countries are all on board. They know what's going on, which is why I think we've seen these lockstep type kind of announcements where everyone is using exactly the same language and saying the same thing. There is no kind of, you know, because if people were really thinking that we need to de-escalate this situation, then surely some criticism of Israel has got to come into the statements, because, you know, it's like you said, it's killed 15,000 children, over 30,000 civilians in total have been bombed to death. Israel is starving over a million people in the region, and it's been dropping bombs on other countries' consulates. If that isn't kind of risking escalation, then I don't know what is. But no, of course, it's Iran. Basil, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this Iranian attack, because to me, it kind of suggests that it kind of backs up what Iran was actually saying before it attacked, which was it was going to attack in a way that didn't escalate things. I think they knew, you know, these drones, they're fairly slow. They would have been taken down. I think this was a gesture to say, look, you know, we've got to retaliate because you've killed two of our generals, you bombed our embassy. But look, we're not going to do any real damage. We're just going to make a gesture to draw a line under this. And that's exactly what the Iranians said. They said, hopefully now there's a line drawn under this. It all feels very, very planned to me. The whole thing is like almost a playing out of a theatrical play.
Yeah, I wouldn't quite go so far as to say that it's a play, but you're right. The Iranians felt they had to do something. And you're right. I think they knew that the drones would be largely shot down. I've seen a figure of 99%. At the moment, both sides can sort of claim a win. That the Iranians are claiming that their operation was a success, that it had achieved its objectives, and they don't plan on doing anything else. They didn't kill anyone. There were actually 12 people, according to the Daily Mail, killed in the Israeli strike on the consulate in Damascus. Two senior generals, one of whom Israeli intelligence claimed was the General Mohammed, was the individual who apparently gave the green light to Hamas to launch its attack on October the 7th. That's why he was targeted in the first place. He was cited by the Israelis as being a key figure in October the 7th. Whether he was or not, obviously, I can't possibly verify that. But yes, it looks as if the Iranians' effort was essentially a gesture. They're capable, together with their proxies in Hezbollah, of flattening Tel Aviv. They've got, you know, ballistic missiles with big warheads on them, according to Netanyahu. They've got nuclear warheads. We don't know that, but we know that the Israelis have. And, you know, you can argue that the fact that everybody knows the Israelis have got undeclared nuclear weapons is what has prevented Iran from carrying out a much bigger attack, because they don't want to be nuked, you know. But The best thing that can happen now is that the shouting match we had yesterday at the Security Council with the representatives of both Iran and Israel demanding that sanctions be placed on each other's countries, that it's confined to jaw, and not more war, because senior US defense officials have told NBC News, for example, that they're very worried an Israeli response to the attacks in the next day or two could be frenetic and, I quote, catastrophically escalatory. That's why Biden and now David Cameron are urging the Israelis not to retaliate. And as I say, their war cabinet meeting broke up earlier today with no decision having been made.
Basil, it doesn't feel like, to me, like I just said, just the feel of all of this, it doesn't feel like those calls on Israel not to do anything are really serious. I'm not suggesting that Israel is going to definitely retaliate against this attack, but it doesn't feel like the message is coming from our leaders. It's not what we've seen in the past where we've had, sort of points in the Middle East where things could all blow out of control. This feels to me like everything is very, very well managed at the moment and under control. I might be wrong, but I don't see any real concerned voices or statements coming out about both sides having to show restraint and, you know, Israel's behavior. Even if it did believe that one of the generals was the one of the ones that gave the green light, showing restraint, because you can't just go around bombing embassies of other countries in different parts of the Middle East.
Exactly. I mean, Iran's been provoked numerous times. A couple of quick points before I go. Donald Trump has vowed he would make Iran pay for the attack if he was in power, but added that such an escalation would never have happened in the first place if he was in the Oval Office. And the war cabinet, Israel's war cabinet, is apparently in favor of a reaction, but divided over the timing and scale of any such response. That's the latest word from Kiria in Tel Aviv.
Yeah. Yeah, and there is the risk here as well. I think there are voices in America that are worried that this is a deliberate attempt by Israel to drag America into the war, because if things kick off, I think, America's going to be...
There are some crazy voices in America calling for the United States to start bombing Tehran. I mean, there are any number of idiots in the United States, irresponsible, dangerous idiots, many of them with long-term sinecures on Capitol Hill. We're fortunate, believe it or not, at this moment with the administration that we have in Washington, that they've said they will not join in any Israeli response. That must be a steadying influence on the Israelis. And we can only hope that it all goes quiet for the rest of the week, James.
I just think this is the same tactic they're using in Ukraine, which is using proxies to deliver damage to their adversary, so Iran in the area. And then they're going, well, it's not us. Yes, okay, we provide them support. I think this is, this potential whole thing is being used by America as a war of attrition now against Iran, as it is against Russia in Ukraine. And of course, one of the things we don't hear, certainly in the UK anyway, I don't know about America, but we don't hear a lot about what Putin has to say about all of this. But if you search for it, there are warnings there. I think our press like to Western populations to see this as a series of events going out of control in the Middle East, whereas actually they are potentially linked to what is going on in Ukraine as well, because Iran supplies Russia with weapons. They have got economic ties as well. So this is a wider thing that's going on. And I'm not sure any of us, and I don't pretend to know what's actually going on in this geopolitical game of chess that is happening at the moment. But I think a lot more is going on than what we're being told, as is always the case. Basil, look forward to speaking with you again in the next hour. I'm sure we'll talk about this some more on this after I've spoken with my first two guests. To the rest of you, don't go anywhere. We're just going to take a short break now. And when we come back, I'll be talking to a British Army veteran and asking him the same question on this, what he thinks is going on in the Middle East. So don't go anywhere. Stay right where you are, right here on TNT.
TNT's Lembit Opik.
The risk of an all-out Middle East war is increasing as the crisis in Gaza grows ever more desperate. This is an interesting story because, first of all, I do agree there's a great volatility in the Middle East now. And secondly, because there's a lot of death. What I disagree with is that it's got worse. Perhaps some of the Western supporters of Benjamin Netanyahu have finally woken up to the fact that whatever you think of the original October the 7th attack in Israel, the response has been disproportionate from the very beginning. The overwhelming majority of people who died in Gaza are innocents, men, women and children who are not combatants and have no intention of being combatants.
Lembit Opik.
And today's news talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission. We don't rock. We talk. Today's news talk, TNT Radio.
Right. Okay. So we can't get away with it. We are going to be talking about that situation in the Middle East. I'm absolutely delighted to be joined now by Warren Thornton, who's actually a former British soldier. He was a sniper for many years in the British Army. Welcome to the Freeman Report, Warren.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. Warren, give us, without me kind of leading you down a certain path or anything, give us your assessment on what you think the big kind of picture thing is going on in the Middle East at the moment.
Well, the big picture at the moment is how Israel are now going to respond to Iran's very carefully thought out strike back for obviously the bombing in Syria and obviously the killing of various people there. It wasn't so much to cause damage, it was to let basically Israel know and America know and everybody else know that this is what we can do. We can do far worse, but we're just showing you what we can do. So when people talk about the damage that happened there, that was literally Iran saying, look, we have this capability.
Yeah, and of course, I guess the other thing that Iran was actually saying is, look, we've got the balls to actually directly attack Israel from Iranian soil, which is something which hasn't happened since the Islamic, when the Islamic government came to power many decades ago. They've never directly attacked Israel since then. So it is quite a bold statement, isn't it? Even though, like I said, I think most of the bombs didn't actually do much damage. I think that was intended to be the case by Iran. Warren, what do you think, though, is the bigger picture in terms of the geopolitics of all of this? Western media, certainly in the UK, don't really talk about Putin very much and how he fits into all of this. And of course, the proxy war in Ukraine. What do you think the big sort of play that is going on here? Because I think, we had leaks when America was in the middle of its war on terror, that there was a long-term plan to get rid of the Iranian regime. Do you think this is part of that plan?
Oh, absolutely, yes. They've been wanting war with Iran for a long, long time. Even when the very first, when October the 7th started up, straight away it was Iran's fault and everybody should go into Iran and smash it to bits. Iran is very much now a major player in that area, and it's very much, they have a very good relationship with the Russians. And in fact, you can see the Russians' hand all over this limited strike. And of course, we were able to warn people this strike was coming up on Thursday afternoon, when lots of people were saying, no, they won't. We knew that Iran was going to strike back through our contacts in the Middle East. And the bigger picture in the Middle East is the war hawks in America. They want to fight with Iran.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you have to ask the question, what is the strategic goal, though, for America in the region? What does it, because, of course, you know, we saw it had its war in Iraq that created chaos for many, many years. Yes, I'm sure America got its hands on a lot of resources there. But what is the strategic goal of going to war with Iran?
Well, first of all, you're completely right. It's always a case of follow the money. So if you have a look at the gas pipelines and the other pipelines that were going to be being built, there are three major bad guys in the world, aren't there? There's China, there's Russia, and there's Iran. And every single one of them was going to be involved in building the new pipeline, whether it be gas or oil. They were going to build the new pipeline. And of course, the Ben-Gurion Canal is of great use. You only have to look back to 1840 with Lord Palmerston of Great Britain, who once the Suez Canal, they knew that was going to be built and it was going to be a major trade center, wanted Britain to have much greater control in the Middle East. This is just another example of where the money's going to come from. If you control that area, as we know, it's completely rich in resources.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if you've heard, but there are plans, you know, you can find it on in certain places of the internet, where Israel does have a plan to build a canal to rival the Suez Canal. There are, gas fields with trillions and trillions of feet of cubic gas there that could be delivered now to Europe, which is very, very energy deficient. Do you think this is just, you know, putting aside the attacks on the 7th of October, that actually what this is really all about is, like, you know, what we were talking about then, is it's all about energy and it's all about money.
It absolutely is. You just follow the money. You literally, if you follow the money, it always takes you to the source of everything. That is absolutely correct. There was a wonderful film many years ago called The 3 Days of the Condor that starred Robert Redford and Cliff Robertson. And right at the end, he said, when people need those resources, when they've got no heating in their homes, when they're starving, he said, they won't care how we get it. They'll just want us to get it for them. And that sort of has framed American foreign policy over the last 30, 40 years, to be fair.
Yeah, I think it's very, very worrying to those of us who don't want war, because, you know, even if there is a plan in place by America, there's just so much room for error, isn't there, for miscalculation, particularly when we've got Russia involved as well. Warren, we're going to take a quick break now. When we come back, I'd like to get your thoughts on, there's been a lot of rumours about conscription coming back to the UK. We've heard a lot of talk about that. I'd like to hear your thoughts on whether you think actually that's credible, because I think there's an awful lot of youngsters these days that would rather go to jail than serve in the British military. So I'd like to hear your thoughts on whether you think these rumours, these talks that are going on, are actually credible. So don't go anywhere, Warren. Stay right where you are, right here on TNT.
Hey, we're getting back to the news.
TNT Radio News.
What the
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps launched a significant attack on Israel this past Saturday, firing 300 drones and missiles from both Iran and locations controlled by its regional proxies. This marks the first direct military assault by Iran and Israel. The Israeli military has mobilized 2 reserve brigades for operations in Gaza. Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has strongly condemned Iran's recent military attacks on Israel, describing them as a significant threat to both Israel and regional security.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Right. Now, God forbid they do bring back conscription. I guess You know, I've got two young kids. It frightens me to death, the thought that they will bring that back. But what are the chances of that, Warren? How bad is it looking for recruitment in the British Army?
It's looking very bad, because at the moment, what you're talking about is we've got a fighting force. So we've got around about 28,000 people in the RAF. We've got about 27,000 in the Navy, and we've got about 73,000 in the British Army. Now, they are leaving in droves. To try and stop that, what they're saying is people who have already been in the British Army and are resigning, they're adding those to the list of people. But it's actually dropped. In the Navy, it's dropped by 4.7%. In the Army, it's down 7.6%. And in the RAF, it's down 4.9%.
What do you think is driving that?
It is a mixture of things. First of all, I don't know if you're on board the HMS Diversity and Inclusion sort of ship that they're sailing out of Portsmouth Harbour, but it's very much a lot of people are put off by that, because obviously if you go into the military, you're meant to see the world and be able to do it. And remember that they absolutely battered the British military. I'll give you, for instance, the Royal Coal Transport was put together with REMI, and that then made the logistics corps, which cut lots and lots of jobs. And they've done that. And our actual fighting force in the army is about 40,000. Now, if you take Bakhmut and what happened there, literally 120,000 Ukrainians died in Bakhmut, soldiers who know the ground, know the area. The British army wouldn't last more than 4 months in Bakhmut.
Yeah, yeah. It's very, very worrying. I mean, do you think that these calls for conscription, they're actually serious, or is this just the kind of rumours that we hear from time to time? Do you think these are serious calls?
They're serious calls for one reason or another. They want to get defence spending up. So they're using this to scare up, first of all, money for the military industrial complex has to be fed all the time, James, as you know. And there needs to be more of a defence procurement budget. But that won't, remember, a lot of that money is spent on high level pensions and everything else. It's not spent on weapons. So you have the British people have never been less likely to join the army. And there's never been a more desperate need for them to get their defence spending up, because NATO is completely fractured. And Britain is obviously wanting to help out with the Ukrainian war effort. But of course, you've got Germany and France at loggerheads. So it's not a viable proposition, James.
Do you know what? I mean, I go from one minute, I think there is a geopolitical plan in place that is being, and it's all very strategic, being led by the US. But when we talk about the detail like this, if it is a strategic plan, there's many, many big holes in it, because at a time when it seems America is pushing war and escalation, both in Ukraine and doing very little to stop escalation happening in the Middle East, despite all of the statements which are put out, it seems incredible that it's doing that whilst our military and it's not just in Europe either, in the US, they've got a recruitment problem as well. It just does seem to be all disjointed. It's very, very difficult to see how this all fits together in terms of if it is a determined plan. Now, in the break, Warren, you were telling me about we should watch out for Moldova and Armenia. Tell us about what's going on there.
Well, very, very simply, when I did an investigation into what the French were up to in Ukraine in 2020, now we can prove that French military intelligence was crawling around, setting mercenaries up and in touch with the Armenian embassy whilst they were setting Ukraine up in 2020. We've actually got the receipts, hotel receipts, Airbnbs where they stayed, everything. And now, of course, Heli Arnoux, who was a part of the French military intelligence, has now just been made the defense attaché to Armenia, and they are also doing little bits in Moldova as well. And the trouble is, Armenia and Azerbaijan have this clash, and French, on behalf of NATO and the US, are doing the dirty work to open up a second front between Armenia and Azerbaijan.
Okay. I mean, what impact do you think that'll have on the region?
It'll have quite a bad one, because then, of course, we'll be talking about Moldova and Transnistria. Of course, they're at loggerheads. Transnistria have asked for Russia's various help when it comes to that, because Moldova are making all sorts of signals. Then, of course, you have to look at Belarus as well. And there, this whole region of the Balkans is ripe for, shall we say, plucking. And now France have already kicked things off in Ukraine on behalf of NATO and the US. And now they're doing it in Armenia. Armenia suddenly have a neo-Nazi problem where they didn't have one. And suddenly the neo-Nazis have got £3 million worth in funding.
How worried are you that, you know, at the moment, these conflicts, we're talking about them from the safety of the UK. You know, they're kind of compartmentalised in different places of the world at the moment. How worried are you that actually this could spill out into wider Europe?
It's the spilling out into wider Europe is not going to be a thing. And I'll tell you for why, because they're making lots of noise, but secretly they know they can't go to war. I mean, I spoke to somebody very high up in the US military who told me that when they were talking about China, and that's the next big thing that's coming, James, these are just warm-ups for China in 3 or 4 years' time. Once they turn around and they go, Taiwan suddenly have a pro-Chinese government in 3 or 4 years' time, that is going to kick off. And the Americans have actually turned around to the politicians, the Navy have turned around to the politicians and say, are you mad? One Kinzhal into our flight deck. We're not flying any planes off anyway.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, Warren, listen, when that does kick off, as I'm sure it will, obviously you've got lots of intelligence links across embassies and through the military. Please do come back on the Freeman Report, because I'd love to hear your assessment of what's going on. Warren Thornton, ladies and gentlemen, thank you, Warren.
Thank you so much for having me, James.
Thank you. Right, okay, we're going to take a short break now. And when we come back, we're going to have TNT's very own Lembit Opik. He was, of course, also a Lib Dem MP as well. So we're going to be talking about the Middle East. And we're also going to be talking about that court case in America with Trump, Stormy Daniels. Going to ask how damaging this could be for Trump. So don't go anywhere. Stay right where you are, right here on TNT.
When the world's endangered animals need help most, when their lives are at greatest risk, when they would otherwise be lost, the International Fund for Animal Welfare is there, taking action to rescue the animals we love, to protect them and their threatened natural habitats. But the danger to animals the world over is growing, and the need for your help has never been more urgent. On land, you'll help stop poachers from threatening and killing elephants and big cats for the illegal wildlife trade. In the oceans, you'll help rescue dolphins, whales, and seals from deadly hazards. And you'll help rescue, rehabilitate, and release vulnerable animals when disasters strike. Here at home and around the world, we can't do this work without you. See how you can help animals and people thrive together at joinifall.org.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha 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 ha.
See, Smokey thinks I'm funny.
This is the Freeman Report with your host, James Freeman, on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, okay, we're just waiting for Lembit to log on. So while he's waiting, I'll talk a little bit more about the Middle East. I go from 1 minute thinking that this is all on the edge of, we're on the edge of World War III and it's all uncontrolled. But the more and more you look into this, I think, as I said to Basil earlier, this is just one big theatre being played out. I mean, those attacks by Iran clearly intended to demonstrate the fact that Iran is not scared of attacking Israel from its direct soil. That it will do that, but clearly not intended to actually do any damage. The US is stood by the sidelines saying it will have nothing to do with any attacks, further attacks on Israel by Iran. So it all feels very, very managed. And I'm absolutely delighted to be welcomed now by Lembit Opik. Lembit, what is your assessment of what is going on in the Middle East at the moment?
the prospect for a regional war would be my answer. The reason for this is simple. What we have is Iran retaliating against an unsolicited attack by Israel against Iran's top commanders in its military forces. That happened in Syria. And Iran giving notice it was going to respond, which it's now done. And I think that it did it in such a way that it was going to minimize damage. Now we've got Israel, the hawks there, talking about the idea of a further retaliation. Now, my judgment here, James, is simple. America doesn't want it. The rest of the world doesn't want it. But Benjamin Netanyahu does want it. And that's for reasons of self-interest and preserving his position.
Do you really believe that, though? Because I know the US is sat on the sidelines saying that we will not, America will not be involved or support a direct attack on Iran. But to me, this feels like a little bit like the war of attrition we're seeing in the Ukraine, where America supplies all the support, which is doing for Israel, by the way. I mean, any weapons that Israel uses against Iran will most likely be US weapons based upon US intelligence. So it feels a little bit like, well, we can have a contained war of attrition to wear down our enemies without there being a direct conflict.
It could be the case that what you say is right, but I don't think so for two reasons. First of all, America will then be fighting on three fronts instead of two, namely Ukraine and Gaza and Iran. And secondly, because the risk of escalation is tremendous here. Iran has powerful friends. It's a huge nation. People don't realize that it's got an excess of 80 million citizens. And also, Iran has been the regional superpower. If you take Iran on, it doesn't stop there. It basically continues and it gets worse and worse, because what you end up with is Russia beginning to feed Iran in the same way that Iran has been feeding Russia in Ukraine. So, James, if America does want to play this war of attrition, Iran has essentially limitless resources. People need to understand that. And Iran isn't universally unpopular. America is probably far more unpopular than Iran across the Middle East, because we hear the narrative mainly from the Israeli side in this country. I work with a lot of Iranians, and they're not particularly happy with what Iran did, but they're certainly very unhappy with what Israel did.
Yeah, although when you look at what's going on there, it's been very, very, other countries around Gaza have been very, very quiet about what's been going on, really. In relation, I guess, in terms of what's actually been going on there. So, you know, Israel killing over 30,000 civilians, starving more than a million, bombing other people's embassies. Given all that's gone on, we haven't really heard a lot from Egypt and all the other countries around there. It seems like the US has done something at the moment. It's got some kind of stalemate in place in the region where it can work on Iran if need be. I guess your final thoughts on this, Lebit, are, do you think Israel is actually going to escalate this further and have another attack on Iran?
Yes to the second, but let me clarify the answer to your first question, because these two things are related. The reason that you're not hearing much is precisely from the other nations is precisely for the reasons you state. The other countries don't really want to get involved. They don't want to end up in a dispute with the United States. But the reason that they're not supporting the US is because they don't really feel that way. If you speak to a lot of people from the Middle East, you realize that Iran is far more significant in peacekeeping, for example, in undermining ISIL, which is to some extent a product of American expansionism and rather cynical foreign policy. Iran was the people who fixed that problem. And General Soleimani, the person that they assassinated in Baghdad, was one of the key generals who undermined that terrorist group. So the reason that other countries aren't talking about it is simple. They sort of support Iran. They're totally sick of Benjamin Netanyahu's warmongering and the killing mainly of tens of thousands of women, children, and non-combatant men in Gaza, and they don't want to be dragged in. Now, on the second point, this is relevant because if Israel is in any way smart, if it's more than just Netanyahu's political survival. They will realize that by attacking Iran, by proxy attacking lots of other countries around as well, and they become even more pariah and even more isolated in the surrounding area. And there's only so much America is going to be willing to do in an election year. And also, if Saudi Arabia eventually says to America, actually, we've had enough now, we're going to side with Iran, where does that take us?
Yeah, it does seem like this situation is ripe for a miscalculation somewhere, I think, by someone, given all the politics involved. Netanyahu hasn't so far shown any kind of nous in terms of Israel's position in the region. Lembit, let's move on to that election in the US. We've heard in the last week or so that Trump is not going to be able to delay this criminal case with Stormy Daniels. What's going on with that case, and how could this potentially impact Trump in the election year?
You rightly say these two things are interrelated, James, and they're interrelated in two ways. The first way is that Joe Biden can start looking rather ineffectual and weak if he doesn't manage his friends in Israel. And to that extent, I think the Democrats will do just about anything to distract attention from Biden's indecision and his apparent weakness, because he can't control Netanyahu, even though you could say he's bought Netanyahu's loyalty through billions of dollars of expenditure. Then the case itself. Donald Trump is actually facing 91 felony charges. 91! There has to come a point when people become suspicious about that. How can he have done 91 things wrong? The Stormy Daniels case, as you'll recall, is about whether he had an interesting extramarital relationship with a professional adult film star.
And yes. It's
I was just being careful about I'm always aware of the fact that somewhere in the world, children are listening, so I don't want to say things which I'll regret later. But with let's say, a rather saucy character. And this all comes down to whether back payments were made illegally, whether there's some criminal activity in that financial sense. But here's the problem. Number one, it's not distracting people from Biden's ineptitude in Israel. And I think he has been inept and weak. And number two, just about everything that's done to Donald Trump makes him stronger. I was speaking to Ed Martin, who's a fairly senior Republican, yesterday on my show on Today's News Talk, TNT. And he said that Trump isn't really suffering too much on this unless they legally stop him from standing. Each time he's accused, as Trump himself says, he gets sympathy from the general public who relate to him. So there is an interrelation here. But the most interesting thing about it is whatever they do doesn't seem to be able to stop Donald Trump from actually leading. And I was there last week, James, and my non-statistical research gave me the indication that Trump is onto winning.
Yeah, I think at the moment, all the polls are showing that Trump is potentially going to win. And of course, in past elections, the polls have always underestimated how many votes Trump has got. So I think he is in, at the moment, if nothing changes, he's in the position to win. I guess the big question, though, is, you know, what is the sort of steps of this trial time-wise? Could we actually see him convicted? And what could those convictions be? Could he actually be sent to jail? Because we were talking about this, I remember at the end of last year, you know, there is no law in America that a president can't be in jail, which seems ridiculous, but we could be in a position where he's convicted and given some kind of punishment and still is able to run. What are your thoughts on how this could unfold?
Three things there. On the first one, which is the last point you made, it's absolutely true. There's absolutely nothing to stop Donald Trump from standing for and running and operating as president, even if he's behind bars. Secondly, the timing is interesting. This is likely to be the only case which he's going to have to face before the election. And thirdly, and I'm answering it in a circuitous way, really, but I really want to get to the heart of the matter. Trump's plan is to show that he's competent and he's a man of the people and Biden isn't. So whatever happens with these trials, it doesn't bottle him up. I noticed when I was in the United States, that Trump supporters are very active. They're energized and they're resentful of the fact that he's being run down. The Biden supporters are much less enthusiastic, and they do tend to say, well, Biden's up to the job. We need a safe pair of hands, but they don't say it with the same enthusiasm. So how will this play out? I think he might be convicted. It's possible, but it won't make any difference to his election campaign. And there are many of his core voters who actually think that this is, rightly or wrongly, a bit of a feather in Trump's cap, that he's still got the presence of mind to be able to, and let's say the physical presence, to be able to muck about the way he's been accused.
Very good, well, yeah. True.
I'm trying to be euphemistic, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you look at this from one angle, it's actually, will Trump... while he's doing all of this and he plays the victim, I'm being attacked by using, lawfare from the Democrats. Well, he's kind of benefiting from that. Biden is in a very, very extremely difficult position, I think, with Israel, because on the one hand, I don't think America want to be dragged in potentially to an escalation. This is one way of looking at it, which I'm hearing analysts talking about in the US. But in an election year, Biden cannot be too critical of Israel. The Jewish lobby in the US is absolutely huge. We've talked about it many times on this show. And so Biden is in a very, very difficult position. All Trump needs to do is say, look, they're coming for me, and they're using the courts, whereas Biden's actually having to deal with these very, very difficult situations in an election year.
Yes, just one clarification. The Jewish community is large. The Zionist community, which is really a political community and isn't quite the same as the Jewish community, is influential and very wealthy. And without unpacking all of that, because we haven't got time in a few minutes.
Yeah.
Essentially, Joe Biden is very aware that if he annoys Israel, he will annoy a lot of his support base and a lot of his financial base. Now, Trump actually did some really good things as far as Israel was concerned in the eyes of the Israelis about Jerusalem and some other things. So Trump can say, when I was in charge, I looked after you. Yes, I did. It was a beautiful thing. And he's actually able to prove it because he did it when he was in charge. But the fundamental problem is this. A lot of people are turning against Israel right now. Biden didn't do it. And now, if Israel responds in a disproportionately large way, then it could be that Iran gets the sympathy, because this seems to be a seesaw situation at the moment. And remember, Iran gave plenty of notice about its attack, and one child got a head injury from 300 drones, missiles, and rockets. I suspect it was premeditated and calculated by Iran to want to look strong, but not to do much damage. So if Israel comes back and kills lots of Iranians, where does the sympathy go? We know that despite all of the efforts of Western politicians, the public came out in favor of Palestinians, and they couldn't stop that. This could happen again with Israel, with Iran.
And what do you think? I mean, I talked in my introduction about it. You know, on the one hand, I think, yes, okay, you can see the politics of it, and you think that actually it's Israel that has the upper hand in this in terms of the relationship with America. And Biden is kind of walking a very, very tightrope and a very, very difficult one at that, versus actually we know that the US have been after gunning for Iran for a very, very long time. I kind of jump from one position to the next. I'm never quite sure whether actually this is part of a geopolitical strategic plan by the US to tackle Iran, or whether actually we are seeing just the US being dragged into a conflict that it doesn't want to be involved in. Where do you sit there on that?
I think the latter. The United States has had a dreadful record over the last 20 years of being involved in failureless attempts to win wars, which it hasn't won. You can't really see America putting the investment in to defeat Iran, which is a robust player in the international field. If I'm wrong, and if America does it, this is the highest game of roulette in our recent political history, because Iran won't just lie down and take it. They've had enough. The reason they've attacked Israel is because they've had enough of being pushed around. Let's remember, Israel has bombed Iranian territory before. It's just Iran that's fought back. That's not what you get from the mainstream media, but that's the truth. So I can summarize it in a sentence. I hope that America is not playing a geopolitical military game, because if they are, the war could come to us.
Yeah, it certainly could, couldn't it? And you know, we're hearing talks. Well, we've been, for best part of a year now, we've been talking, hearing calls for the UK to prepare for war from very, very senior people within the military. There's constant talk about, you know, the amount that European countries put into NATO. So I'm still not sure, Lembit, one of those things is true. I guess it doesn't matter, because we could end up in a war either way, couldn't we? Which I think many of us really do not want. We've run out of time, Lembit, but listen, thank you for joining me for that insight and analysis. Look forward, obviously, you've got your shows at the weekend for anybody who wants to catch up with Lembit Opit. Thank you very much. Right, okay, we're going to take a short break now, but don't go anywhere, because we'll be right back right here on TNT.